You've got a deputy director on the first page that is on the same level as you.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the same as the person on the second page that's underneath you?
Yes. If you're referring to the box that says Taylor,
yes.
Taylor is the same Taylor, although she has since retired. So it's not that person. It's a vacant position that I have an acting person in right now. She retired at 1st of March.
Okay, and then underneath of that, I believe that's Greenwood.
Mm-hmm.
And he also is the same classification as all of the people that are on this major management level.
That's correct, Madam Chair. He is, Steve Greenwood was the Western Region Administrator. That position is now occupied by Kerry Nelson. And Steve Greenwood is in a what's called a double fill of that position until the end of the biennium, and then it goes away. He's on a special assignment working on Clean Water Act and Endangered Species Act issues.
So this is like a limited duration position.
Okay. His role, as reflected on this chart, goes away at the end of the biennium.
This is going to take a while to...
That's fine. We're here at your convenience.
Do we have to meet tomorrow, Madam Chair? And Sunday also. Okay.
And Sunday. You can share for me if you want to be here Sunday.
I'd be happy to do that.
Do not show up.
Just mine.
Okay. I'm not sure that it's the best use of our time right now to go through the org chart with a fine-tooth comb, so why don't you continue on with the presentation that you were working on, okay?
So this does give me an opportunity to start over on this, so I'm going
a little
slower pace here. Okay, so this is how we see our budget when we go to implement it. So let's take air quality, for example. If you look back on the chart that says legislative view of our budget, this duplicates this chart, except it breaks it down more finely to show how we need to implement it. Instead of it just being general, other, and federal funds, it's broken down into many different funds, and most of these are within the other funds category. Most of our fees are dedicated to a particular use, and in fact, our federal funds are given to us under grants that have work product agreements with them. So we need to manage each of these funds separately, and in this bar graph, each different color is it represents a different fund. Now, I can tell you what those funds are if you like, but it does demonstrate the kind of the complexity that we need to go through to manage them. We need to have each of these funds managed as a business unit, and we need to track how they're spent, make sure they're spent on the things that they're authorized to go to, and that we need to account for that. And we also need to do forecasts. You don't actually have this slide, but it gives you an idea of what we need to do. And the way we control these, some of the ways we control these are that we have accounting funds that are set up to match the spending restrictions, whether those are in statute or rule. We have a time accounting system developed that will restrict the ineligible charges. Employees do charge time to what they're working on, which isn't always what they're budgeted to work on. And so we need to make sure that we're staying within our limitation, our LAB, legislatively adopted budget limitation on each of these funds. For each fund, we do a quarterly revenue and expenditure forecast. So for each of these colors, we do that type of a forecast just to track and make sure that we're on course for budget. And
so you essentially then are rebalancing your budget every quarter? you're checking it to make sure that it's on track with where you were planning to be with receipts and expenditures?
That's correct, Chair Morgan.
Okay.
If I could clarify that, it's not so much a rebalancing as it's like an operating budget where you have the target, which is the legislatively adopted budget, which predicts how much revenue we're going to get and limits how much we can spend. And so then we have an operating budget, so we track our revenues and expenditures as we go through the biennium to ensure that we're within the boundaries that you set. And if we're not getting as many revenues in as we anticipated, then of course we have to back up our spending as well. And so we do track that each quarter. Did that answer your question?
Yes, it does.
Okay. And then we do have cash flow management, of course, as any organization does, so that from month to month we need to make sure that we're managing our expenses responsibly, and that we have enough cash on hand to pay payroll.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
How do you deal with short-term cash flow problems?
With short-term cash flow problems, we can usually do something that it's easiest to think of as borrowing from one fund to get us by until revenues come in from the appropriate fund, and then we would repay that.
Madam Chair, that leads, of course, to another question that is probably buzzing through your mind also. We had this little problem with this with ODF&W, borrowing from an account that was set up by statute, could not be used for the purposes with which they were borrowing. I'm assuming that as you do this as an ongoing practice, that you have the statutory authority to do that. Is that correct?
Madam Chair and Representative Krupp, absolutely. And we're fully aware of the difficulties, and we do not wish to take that
okay.
experience.
Just wanted to be sure.
We don't need to do that very often. We try to plan ending balances in our budget or beginning balances in our budget so that we take care of those cash flow problems and we have enough flexibility as we go through. It doesn't work out that way 100% of the time.
Thank you.
Okay. So, if we were to... We have considered breaking down our budget by location in the past for the very reasons that you express, because it really is hard to see the operational approach with our budget the way it's constructed by program. And if we were to do that, we would also need to break it down by fund within geographic location. And the reason that we would need to do that is because of the restricted funds, and we're really funded by programs. And so if we did that, here's what it would look like. So what we've done is, if you would just put these charts side by side for a moment. This chart that we just looked at, the DEQ view of our budget, and the chart that I have projected up here. And what we would need to do is to take this bar for air quality and break it down like this, this arrow that I'm showing up here. So we break this one bar down into the headquarters portion of air quality, vehicle inspection program, Northwest region, Western region, Eastern region, and the laboratory. And then we would be managing each of these funds, each color, within each of those locations, as well as within the air quality program.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Just briefly on the chart that's up on the screen, the large blue area, that what does VIP stand for?
Oh, Madam Chair and Representative Krupp, I apologize. That's Vehicle Inspection Program.
Okay.
We get to speaking our own language sometimes.
Yeah. Thank you.
The yellow portions, the bottom portions of each bar there are the general fund. And so this is the only fund area where we really have much potential for moving money around. And when we feel like we need to do that, then we would bring that to you in a policy package, as we have in this budget. So I'm going to pause there for just a minute.
Question for you. Madam Chair, what is your estimated, out of your entire budget, how much, what percentage do you spend on management?
Madam Chair and Representative Krupp, may I clarify the question?
Sure, please.
By management, do you mean the central services, the infrastructure, or indirect type, or do you mean managers?
I would say rather the former, your central structure, because your managers will be in the field, will they not? And will some of them will actively be engaged in projects and processes and so I would be more interested in the central.
Okay, Madam Chair and Representative Krupp, we spend about 10% of our operating budget on the indirect functions. It's about 5.8% of our total budget, but the more realistic comparison is to our operating budget.
Okay, so 5% of your total budget.
Correct.
10% of your actual operating budget.
Representative, that's correct. And the total budget, of course, includes all that flow-through money.
Right.
I think the question that comes to my mind as I step through this is that with having your budget organized in the silos the way that it is, and I think you've done a really good job of showing the complexity of dividing it up any more fully, I would like to have some more information about how, in the budgeting process, the decision is made on breaking down each of the funds between the regions and the headquarters and the lab. How does that process work? Mm-hmm. And then the second question I have is, what assurance does this body have that the way that you... Basically, I guess the question is more like, what latitude does the agency have to move funds around between the different regions?
Madam Chair, I'll take a stab at that, if I may, and let me answer it in two parts. First of all, with regard to the budget, I just want to remind you that the way the current budget structure is in these big silos. It's not like that. So within the budget, the division between headquarters, region, everything else is invisible.
Not there.
Right.
Yeah.
But as a management operational decision about what positions go to the regions versus stay in headquarters versus go to the lab, if that is part of your question, I can respond to that, and I think we talked about this a little bit the other day about how the agency makes that decision as a matter of policy when the management team sits down and decides how many air people will be in Eastern region versus how many will be in South.
That's the question that I want, the process, or the part of the process that I would like to get some clarity on.
Okay.
How the agency decides where to allocate the money in the silos.
Okay. I will answer that, and then I will finish by answering the other part of your question, which is where is the potential for you to impact that as it currently exists. The way it happens is generally, it can happen a couple of processes. One might be our internal agency strategic planning process, and or in our budget development process. But and as I think I mentioned the other day, the last time that it happened in a big way was when we actually decentralized the agency. And we all sat down and we said, okay, how many people are going to serve Eastern Region and how many are going to be in Northwest and how many in Western and how many do we need in headquarters to do policy, et cetera. And The short answer is number of sources, complexity of sources, population. It's factors like that, types of program needs. For example, and again, I'm familiar with Eastern Region, in air quality, on the west side of the mountains, in particularly in Medford and Portland, the issue is automobile.
If not all of it is for water, wastewater, treatment facilities. So when we're looking at using that lottery capacity up, it follows at least two legislative sessions of direction from this body. One would be focus on urban and rural distressed communities and focus on infrastructure grants. And make it, you know, we did that in the 97 legislative session, and in the 99 legislative assembly, we did shift significant dollars toward the infrastructure objectives, living by committing lottery dollars there. So I think this is a continuation of that kind of thing. The concern is that we use up, at least in the governance proposal, all of the remaining capacity, or most of it. I think that was your concern.
My thought was, I wasn't unduly concerned about it, but my thought was that all the capacity has, all or near all the capacity had been used up, and I didn't realize, and are you saying that they are really talking about the same dollars, the dollars the governor used, which almost used up the capacity, are the same dollars that they are talking about?
Madam Chairman, partly the same, but partly these funds would be leveraging federal dollars as well. I mean, the idea is that we're using scarce state resources to leverage relatively abundant federal resources.
Thank you.
And I think that all of us have had experiences in our district where these funding sources have become very important to these projects becoming real. The cost of putting these kinds of facilities on the ground is staggering in relation to the resources that are available in a lot of the communities. So these programs are important. Well, please proceed.
The next slide, we are discussing the wastewater bond and debt service forecast. This is not a cumulative slide, so we need to reorient our thinking around that. It shows the actual bond sales that we have held in the past for prior biennia, in each of the biennia, and also what we project going out into the future. Those are the green bars, and we are projecting a need for an $8 million per biennium sale for the state revolving fund match component. The blue chart simply shows you the growing amount of debt service that we are forecasting based on our current bond sales that have already occurred plus the forecasted bond sales out into the future. We would note that in the 03-05 biennium, the biennial debt service at that point for the first time will exceed that biennium's bond sale amount. That is, we will get $8 million of bond proceeds and will pay something more than $8 million in debt service that biennium. We do need to recognize that $8 million is representative of the bonds that we have sold for the prior six biennia, however. And I'd like to now move on to the orphan site cleanup program and the use of bonds and debt service in that area. In the orphan site program, as you've heard during previous program presentations, we use these bond proceeds to fund cleanup sites where there is no identified responsible party or the responsible parties are unwilling or unable to pay for the cleanup. The bonds in this program are the primary source of funds to clean up these sites. Historically, I've added this little factoid. Historically, we have recovered approximately 21% of cleanup costs on orphan sites. The driver on that has been a small number of fairly large collections, such as on McCormick and Baxter, and we don't know that that will continue into the future, that we'll be able to rely on that level of cleanup cost recovery on our future orphan sites.
Have you estimated the bonding necessary to cover the Portland Harbor issue? Is that figured into this?
Madam Chair, I'd like to ask Paul Sleiman, the cleanup division administrator, to come forward and address that issue.
Is that the Superfund listing that you're referring to?
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paul Sleiman. Your question was, have we included potential orphan sites from Portland Harbor in this estimate? Is that correct? We estimate that there'll be two additional orphan sites from Portland Harbor in this upcoming biennium. We have included them in this estimate. There's always the possibility that there may be more than two. That we retain the flexibility so that we could address those or convince responsible parties to take action at those other sites that may crop up in Portland Harbor.
Please proceed.
On the next slide, I'd like to discuss the, again, we have packages in our budget for the orphan site program. There are three policy packages that are required to be passed to make the funding proceed and to allow us to actually spend the bond proceeds. That is package 133, which is part of our limited budget, and allows us to actually spend the proceeds on doing cleanup work. And then packages 520, which is a small amount of non-limited to cover debt service issuance costs, bond proceeds and the issuance costs. And then package 560 is the actual debt service for the bond sale. Here we would be issuing $8 million of general obligation bonds. The 0103 debt service for that is $282,405 to be paid for on other funds. We have some small amount of other fund balances remaining that we can use for debt service, and we have provided those for this budget. However, the debt service would roll up to approximately $1.35 million per biennium for the next 10 biennia. And future debt service funding has not been identified for this bond sale.
I can see us getting into a vicious bond sale cycle here.
Vicious, Madam Chair?
Yeah. Vicious. It like the bond chasing is uh-huh. Okay. Questions, comments, other than my sarcastic ones, Senator Sirianni?
Well, I think there's a lot of sources for bond servicing. Part of those will undoubtedly come from recoveries from landowners. Some, this is a relatively new approach in Oregon, has been used elsewhere. Some from special taxing districts, either at the municipal level or possibly a special district inside a municipal boundary where landowners participate in order to be involved in the direction of the cleanup activities. So I guess the trade-off landowners may be asked to participate in is a special taxing district to help reduce the costs or cover the cost of debt service. Participation in a program that offers a low-cost bonding access and accessibility to the process, except direction and timing and sequencing of the cleanup, sort of you know, a meeting of the minds about how do we, how does a landowner meet their own obligations for a cleanup under a Superfund site? Because it's not a public obligation, it's the landowner obligation. If it can't be discharged by the landowner, it defaults to the public. But the fact is that most of the properties in the Portland Harbor are highly valuable, potentially more valuable in the future when they're cleaned up sites. And if there's a mechanism for cleaning them up that doesn't bankrupt the landowner, that's by far preferable to the alternative, which is that the landowner tosses you the keys and says, have a nice day. And let's stay clean. So part of the potential debt service, even though it can't be identified now because we cannot obligate a future legislature, we if we correct these debts, we'll have to enter into some negotiations and find some solutions that involve landowners to pay them off in the future. But I think that's possible in a case like Portland, where you've got high-value land and the utility is clearly going to be preserved by the cleanup.
I agree with Tony. We have about 14 minutes here.
We're coming to the end. Now, the next slide is a view of the cumulative orphan site bond proceed issuance, similar to what we showed with the SRF program, with the addition of the proposed $8 million bond sale in the 0103 biennium. As you can see, we have issued something more than $40 million of orphan site bonds over the life of the program. Oh, yeah, but Paul Sliman just reminded me that we will have issued, Madam Chair, to correct the record, we will have issued $40 million worth of bond proceeds, assuming that the policy package is approved and we proceed with an $8 million bond sale, this biennium, the 0103 biennium.
Always assume the close, ma'am, when you're selling.
We remember one of the dictums in selling is that you're not selling just the features, you're selling the benefits of the features.
Now let's talk about debt service forecasts here.
Don't you want to take her for a test drive first?
The next slide covers the orphan site debt service forecast in the same format that we looked at the Clean Water SRF. Again, we are projecting an $8 million biennium forecast for these the out biennia all the way out to 07-09. And as you can see, gradually the debt service continues to rise on the prior bonds that we've issued plus the additional bonds that we forecast. And in this case, it is the 05-07 biennium at which point the debt service for that biennium will exceed the bond issuance during that biennium. Again, we need to recognize that that debt service is paying for all of the prior bonds that were issued up until that point in time. And...
Well, I hope we'll turn it limited in 07-09.
Well, let's see. Madam Chair, that might not work for some.
Yeah, Madam Chair. Yeah. Just walk me through this just one more time. We're borrowing money to pay our bills. Is that what I'm hearing here?
Representative Hayden, that is correct. We borrow money so that we can, in essence, invest that money in doing cleanups of sites where there is no other funding available to us, and then we essentially pay back that bond over the subsequent 20-year period.
Yeah, I understand that, but can I read this chart to understand that we're just borrowing enough to pay the interest on the bonds that we've already issued?
Representative Hayden, Madam Chair, that is not what this chart is supposed to be communicating to you, and clearly I have not communicated properly what this chart is showing. The green blocks on this chart represent, for past biennia, the actual bonds that we have sold in each of those biennia. So, for example, in the 97-99 biennium, we sold $5 million of orphan site bonds that we used then to pay for orphan site cleanups. In the 99-01 biennium, we sold $8 million. And we project in the four outlying biennia to sell $8 million in each of those biennia as well. As we sell those bonds, however, and continue to add additional bond sales to the pool, that is, our cumulative bond proceeds increase, and let me go back to the prior slide, maybe that will help. In the prior slide, you can see the cumulative orphan site bonds are increasing each biennium on this slide. It perhaps would have been a better presentation to show you the blue part of this chart laid against the prior chart to show you how the debt service continues to increase as the cumulative bonds outstanding go up. That's really what the blue part of this chart is showing you.
All right, so now I'm understanding that there's really no direct relationship between the green and the blue bars.
Representative,
you sold this many bonds. You sold this many bonds, you use it to do a service, to clean something up. And on the other hand, you paid $10 million in interest on previous bonds.
Representative Hayden, Madam Chair, that is correct. They are not related, except that we are often asked questions in legislative bodies and by others as to this issue of when the current biennium debt service equals or exceeds the bond proceeds that we propose to sell during that biennium. We often get questions at that time as to alternative funding sources. The question, why do we use bonds, is often asked. And we present this simply as a piece of information to show that the 05-07 biennium for the orphan site program is where that event, if you will, occurs.
Madam Chair, may I pursue just another moment? Yes. Well, if you sold zero bonds in 07-09, you'd have zero green and $10 million in blue. If you sold $20 million in bonds in 07-09, you'd have a green line that was twice the blue one.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The analogy that makes the most sense to me is to think of this as a household that keeps taking on new credit card debt. It might otherwise be analogous to a mortgage, but for cleanup purposes, although we're building something that the future payers, the taxpayers, will benefit from, we're really paying off something that is not a tangible asset, such as when you build a school or a hospital with bonds. We're paying off last night's dinner, essentially, on a credit card that's accumulating interest. And to follow up on Representative Hayden's line of thinking, and I think the point of showing the cumulative debt relative to the debt payment on it is really what's at issue. You could, in fact, have a zero issuance in 07-09, but you'd still have that almost $10 million worth of payments because, oh, you don't show this here, you'd have, probably by that point, you'd have $65 million worth of debt on your balance sheet. This shows cash flow. It doesn't show the balance sheet. It doesn't show how much we owe.
Madam Chair, I suspect my director would kick me if she could for not telling the features of the orphan program. And while we've talked considerably about the bonding issues, I think that, Representative Nolan, one of the comments that you made just reminded me that this is not just about cleaning up remote sites in remote parts of Oregon. Much of the site, many of the sites in the orphan program that are cleaned up because there is no owner, are put back into productive reuse by the community. And the biggest example I can give you is the site in Astoria, the plywood mill, whereby it sat dormant for an awful long time. The orphan program went in with just enough seed money so that now it is becoming part of the Astoria community. So I know that Mr. Rocco distributed to you copies of our cleanup book. There are many orphan sites in there. Some of them are cleanups of abandoned mining sites that perhaps people will not be impacted, but many of them are cleanups in small towns across Oregon, nowhere near Portland, that then do become a productive part of the community.
Thank you. We are about out of time, and I think we're out of presentations also.
Madam Chair, that's correct. That does end my presentation.
Stephanie, did you have anything you wanted to leave us with here?
Madam Chair, I just would like to thank the committee for your attention and your courtesy. I know that we are not the most popular agency in the building, but I felt like we've had some really productive conversations, and I hope that you have benefited from learning a little bit about what we do in some detail, and I appreciate the time to make these presentations to you.
Thank you. Any comments or closing statements from the committee members?
I have benefited from the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you. I've learned a huge amount. And this, I think, is clearly the most complex budget that the committee's tackled this session. And I just want to express my appreciation for how easy it's been to work with the agency and how responsive you've been in the information that you've brought us in answering our questions and just engaging in the conversation.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And with that, we will adjourn the committee. We will not be meeting on Friday, but Mr. Rocco should make some announcements, I think, about what we're going to be doing next week.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On Monday, there will be two grant application requests brought before the committee that we'll need to have a work session done on. One is for watershed restoration funding workshops, and the other is a large request to the Northwest Planning Power Planning Council for some restoration grant money that may be available. And then the after that, the committee will start to have public hearings on the Parks and Recreation Department, which will start on Monday after the grant requests are dealt with and continue for the rest of that week.
Thank you. Representative Nolan, Madam Chair, Mr. Rocco,
do we have those grant applications and can we review them now so that we can be prepared for the Monday discussion?
Representative Nolan, we have draft letters from the agencies that I would be glad to share with committee members that would like to look at those.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Perhaps you could circulate those to our offices.
I could do that, yes.
Thank you. And having no further business, we will adjourn until Monday.